Woohoo! Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today, and we might be sounding a little bit more clear than we have in the past.
All thanks to a podcast listener who reached out to me over Instagram and said, Megan, your microphone is angled in the wrong direction. And upon doing a little bit more research, I realized that our microphone was at half mast instead of being fully erect.
Oh no, you don't want that.
I know, I did the full scale microphone research. So apparently you're supposed to talk into the sides of the microphone and not directly into it, at least with a specific Yeti microphone. Also learned that the top of the microphone is called the grill. So we got some mad grills on this microphone.
Well, I want everyone to know that no matter whether your microphone is half staff or full mast, you are fully loved the way you are. And some microphones just get nervous, and that's okay. But yeah, we also looked into our audience because we wanted to step back and just thank you all. This has been mind-blowing to us that people are listening. We appreciate your kindness, your love, and most of all, your patience as we figure this out and make penis
including
jokes about
microphones.
Yeah, exactly, about our very dildo-looking microphone right now. And a few statistics, not listener numbers, but in terms of the breakdown, the current audience is 53% female, 44% male, and 2% non-binary. That doesn't add up to 100, but I am no mathematician, so I'm going to let it pass. And the reason I wanted to mention that real quick is we talked about identity last week in the context of jobs and things like that. But you know, these very personal identities, we're going to start talking about stuff like that a lot more, because we just want to say, no matter where you're coming from, no matter what your background, you are seen and you are loved, and you're this short time that you have here on earth. Like, you know, we want you to feel supported just as you are.
Well, it's funny because I think we're sending that love and that joy only to humans though. So the podcast came up with an interesting stat that 100% of our podcast listeners are on earth.
Oh,
I was very sad to see that statistic because that means we have zero listeners on Uranus. Quite sad about that.
I love that you made that joke.
But also, we have listeners on the North Pole.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Pretty amazing. I wonder what Trodang's like up
there.
Yeah,
and we also learned that we're the number one sports podcast in Croatia for all sports. I'm pretty proud of that. I don't really know anything about Croatia.
What do you think is their top sport?
Oh, I have no idea. What do you think their food is? I don't know.
I'm going with curling as our top sport. Food, I'm going with baklava.
Oh, I like it.
I don't know if that's the pronunciation. I'm going to have to make an apology in the next episode if it's not, but I'm feeling baklava in Croatia curling.
I think that's the face thing you wear over your face. I'm not exactly sure.
That's called balaclava.
Oh, and you're wandering into very, very thin ice there. So we also learned from a listener that we are not overdosing Addy Dog with our joint pills. So last week I talked about how many joint pills I give Addy, which is
a lot.
Pretty scary number. It's kind of, Addy is binge eating her joint pills. But a 1996 study in the American Journal of Veterinary Research found that you can pretty much give dogs like those Cosequins like they're candy, which is what I'm doing. So it's pretty great.
I opened the podcast outline today and just love this. I think this is the first time we've had a veterinary research grace the scientific part of this podcast outline. But I was thinking, I was like, you know, if this is where sports medicine is an exercise physiology study, this veterinary research study would be done in 100% male. There'd be no female dogs in this study.
So maybe it doesn't even apply to Addy's dog. Yeah, that's a bigger beef with exercise physiology. All male participants all the time. Total sausage fest. So last little thing in this very start of the podcast is email your questions, someworkallplay@gmail.com. We haven't mentioned this in a while. Clearly, we're straying very far from the running topic sometimes, mainly because we're planning on doing this podcast forever. So we don't really want to just burn through all the interesting running topics right away.
Send your questions, send your feedback, we've learned so much from you. Clearly, we spent 4 minutes in this intro just talking about things that we've learned from our podcast listeners. So thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of this
journey. I feel like we're going to get some photos of Uranuses. So two athletes today for episode 35. We're going to start with the Kevin Durant episode. He was 35 when he was with the Golden State Warriors. He's a basketball legend. The thing we really want to shout out to him right now is he came back from a torn Achilles this year, and he's coming back as fast and as powerful as ever.
He is rocking. Also, you go back and look at the data on torn Achilles in the NBA. It is not great.
No.
If I torn my Achilles and saw that data, I'd be like, oh my gosh, this is scary. So 2013 study found that there were 18 cases in 23 years. And of those 18 cases, 7 athletes never returned back, and then no one returned
to their prior form. That is so scary.
That's horribly scary. But I think this emphasizes two things. One, that KD is a boss. Clearly, we know that. But also, too, like, sports medicine is evolving in this really amazing direction. Medicine in general, I think we've seen that with the COVID vaccine. But I was just talking with an athlete who had a devastating ski injury and, like, really highlighting the fact that, like, you know, you can go back and look at these statistics from old sports medicine injuries. But man, we're progressing forward, and it's cool to see.
Yeah. And I mean, your hamstring is a great story of that, too, where, you know, you were told that who knows about your running future, and you're running faster than ever. ever right now. It's so cool to see. So if you're dealing with something like that, know there is hope. It's not just KD. John Wall came back from the same type of injury this year, and he is looking just as fast as ever.
He's looking monstrous. He's looking great.
It's so cool. And then the little flip side of that that I love about Kevin Durant, because, you know, I love that nasty, dirty gossip, is that at one point, Kevin Durant commented under his actual Twitter account on someone giving him shade online. And he said something like clapping back at this person. Turns out this whole time, Kevin Durant has been trying to comment under burner accounts. And he has a number of burner accounts on every social media platform to respond to the haters.
Some of the comments that he has on these burner accounts are classic. Here's one. Your little ass ain't playing varsity.
I love that.
Another one. Your bum ass is begging for a picture. And then you talk shit on Instagram. And these are all to high school athletes, hence the varsity thing. I just found it fascinating that here's KD, such a boss, you know, very, very good at what he's doing. And he's like, you know, clearly, I think the fact that he created these burner accounts, like he's feeling this hate from high school athletes and like feeling it deeply and on an internal level. And I think like, you know, even though KD is this amazing person, like he's human.
I love that so much. Every single time someone comments anything, even slightly critical on my articles right now, I'm going, your little ass ain't playing varsity.
The other thing I love about KD, he's great on Twitter in general. So this week, actually, he had to get pulled from a game due to contact tracing from COVID. It was a little bit sketchy. The NBA in general has handled COVID amazingly. They didn't handle the situation great. But so he walked back to the locker room, and within 3 minutes of getting pulled from the game, just tweets in all caps, free me.
I feel like if Addie had a Twitter every single time we left the house, she would be barking at when she's barking at the window, she's just like, free me. Free me, channeling her inner KD.
She'd have like 1K likes on all those tweets.
Yeah. So yeah, for anyone out there that feels the hate sometimes, know that even KD has those burner accounts, and you can call out people that their little punk ass aren't playing varsity. The other athlete, very quickly, I wanted to give a quick shout out to Ricky Henderson, baseball legend, one of my favorite players ever. So many great things about him. But what we're just talking about now is that he is famous for talking in the third person. Megan's going to have a couple quotes, but my favorite story about Ricky Henderson is in the 1980s when he was young, still hadn't made much money. The Oakland A's started freaking out. Their accounting department started freaking out. $1 million was missing. Where does $1 million go? This was a lot of money in baseball back then. The contracts were not big. And so they're searching everywhere. They start a formal investigation only to come to Ricky Henderson and find out, oh yeah, he never cashed that check. He just put it on his wall to show him the hard work he had done.
It's really funny because as I'm sitting here thinking about this, you know, I think we should do this in reverse. So we should put all the parking tickets that we got in California and just hang them up on our wall instead of paying them. And see, you know, that probably wouldn't end well.
That's basically what we've done, though.
That is true. That is basically what we've done.
I love that.
The other thing I love about Ricky Henderson is he has, you know, as he talks in third person, he's accumulated these great stories about some quotes he's had. So he called the San Diego general manager and he left a message for him. And he said, "This is Ricky calling on behalf of Ricky. Ricky wants to play baseball." Like, I think it's just like so much swag and like,
I love that though. Right, being able to leave like inside your own head, the eye, to see yourself from the outside. I think that's actually probably healthier than we give it credit for.
Well, I think actually for him, it's been a superpower. So there's another story too, where he walks up, you know, he's walking back to the dugout after he struck out. And another player overheard him saying, "Don't worry, Ricky, you're still the best." And it's like, I feel like it does come in handy for some of this like good self-talk.
I love, every time I stumble over my words on the podcast, I'm just like, "Don't worry, David, you're still the best." So maybe we can all channel that a little bit. Just say, whatever your name is, I'm still the best. Or even better, the Terrell Owens quote, another famous football player who talked in the third place in person a lot too. He just said, "I love me some me." And so I think we can all take a little bit from that.
That one might be a good one written on the bathroom mirror. I'm feeling that in the morning and every day being like, "I love me some me."
I love it. So also Super Bowl week. And you know, as much as I don't like Tom Brady, there were some amazing stories related to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers who won the Super Bowl. And I think the big one is that their entire coaching staff was full of minority coaches and female coaches. And it was the first team with two women on their coaching staff to make it and win the Super Bowl.
So yeah, the assistant defensive line coach, Lori Locust, the strength and conditioning coach, Marlon Jabadifar, that's a hard word to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just, I mean, to me, that was really inspiring. There was also a female ref on the Super Bowl, which I thought was very cool. But Jabadifar had a great quote to young girls when asked about the topic of, if, you know, her position. She said, "Work hard and be confident. Seek opportunities that seem far-fetched." I just love this.
That's like so cool.
Yeah. And I think like the confidence is truly there. It's like, you know, put in the work, but also like advocate for yourself, like have confidence in this process, have swag. And I think she's such an emblematic example.
And I think
that
the confidence is hard because I don't know. Where does that come from? I mean, I think for everyone, you start from a place of like, you know, she's a strength and conditioning coach. She's still pretty young. It's like, there's probably part of her that's like, do I know exactly what I'm doing at all times, or at least early in her career? And it's like, how do you get over that step? And I mean, at a certain point, you have to make the decision that this is going to be who I am. Because if you wait for it to happen, I don't know if that confidence can ever come.
And I think you have to make the decision knowing that imposter syndrome is pervasive and that everyone struggles with it. And that making the decision doesn't make you some person that you're not. Like, it's just, you know, it's like, it's you, like, you know, deciding to be confident. And that's not like going against who you are.
Yeah. And it's not like, not unhumble or anything. It's not cocky. This is just trying to like express your spirit. And it must be so hard for women. I mean, I can't even imagine for these women in this setting where, you know, the like the egos in the locker rooms and this traditional football culture that is toxic masculinity defined. I mean, the sport is basically, you could just put the toxic masculinity world championships on the Super Bowl and that's what you'd get.
So I always find it fascinating that the Super Bowl is called the world championships. It's like, does anyone else in the world play American football? Does Croatia play American football?
I don't know. Oh man, I'm feeling less good about being the number one sports podcast knowing they don't have football. But yeah, I mean, it must be so hard on women. And so especially for women, non-binary people, you know, minority people out there that are listening, it's like, whatever it takes to get to that point, you know, to be inspired by Maral Javedafar, like that is where we need to get to, because that's where the beautiful things happen. And like, I don't know, I think sometimes, you know, coming from a white man, that's easier to say, but I've seen Megan like rocking it around that house recently in a way that has been pretty darn cool.
Well, this is actually a topical story. Yeah. So we've had a lot of things falling apart in this house. I think, you know, we live in a farmhouse. It's COVID. Like, you know, things are just bound to fall apart. Like we for months have had no light in our master bedroom and bath because the light bulbs have burned out. The circuit was broken, like all these kinds of things. And finally I took it upon myself. I'm like, you know, David, you're not going to do this stuff. Like David does a lot around the house. I mean, you take out the trash, you do groceries, you do like a number of things, but like, you know, if it's outside of your routine, it's not going to happen. Well, so I've just like taken upon myself. I'm like, you know, Megan, it's time to fix these circuits. It's time to fix these light bulbs. It's fine to do these things around the house. And I was like, I was kind of peeved at first. I was like, this is a man's task. Like you should be the man of the house, David. You should be doing this. And
I'm just subverting traditional gender stereotypes. I'm being a feminist with my lack of fixing lights.
Plus, I was curious to see how long this is going to go on for. I'm just,
forever.
Yeah, I was like, your solution to solving the fact of not having lights is just going to be like to order a lantern on Amazon or to like create this like seance of like of candles in our.
I got to be honest. I just like darkness. I mean, or what I'm saying is both darkness and light, both pretty cool. I'll take them both.
But it's been fascinating because I think as I've gone through, it's been a couple weeks now where I'm just like dedicated to fixing these things around the house. And it's really created this like empowering, like fix it mindset in me. I'm like, well, I can do whatever. All I have to do is read the instructions. I can figure this out. I can climb up a ladder. I can take my toolbox.
Yeah.
And I think that approach has like largely applied to other things in life. And it's been something that's super empowering for me.
So you've
I think
rocked
like,
it.
To other women out there, if there's light bulbs around, if there's like, you know, all these things that are like classically like man's work around the house, just do it. It's super empowering. It's fun. Like I think, you know, there's this like proverbial glass ceiling.
Yeah.
Like I think the way that we should shatter that glass ceiling is we should go and fix all the light bulbs in the glass ceiling. We should go fix the circuit breakers. We should make it snazzy, look good, and then just go shatter the shit out of it.
Oh, I love it. And to all the men out there, you can do what I did, which is last night we cooked a dinner and it really caked on the bottom of the plant on bottom of the pan. And I started to clean it and I was like, you know what? Fuck this pan. And I just threw it in the trash. And honestly, I was doing my part for the feminist movement. I'm learning.
Granted, we've had that pan for 6 years. It was ready to go.
Yeah,
but I think that's like truly very emblematic of your speed around the house. And I mean, I love it. It's comedic. Oh, no, it's great. It's amazing. And you do truly do a lot.
Oh, that means so much to me that you're saying that in front of all of our listeners. But I don't actually do that much. And Megan has been shredding the house in the best way. Like everything looks beautiful. You're rocking it. And I appreciate it very deeply.
Well, it's fun. It's kind of opening up this like different brain space in my head and I love it.
Yeah. And as is meditation, love and kindness meditation, which we talked about before, which you've needed to apply a little bit more special ways recently.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So last week, Addie and I were out walking and we have this like backyard open space. We almost never see anyone out there. I've gone on 10-mile runs in our backyard, never seen a single person. So I'm taking a conference call on my phone. Addie is snarfing about doing whatever. She's pretty close to me. And all of a sudden I see a park ranger coming down on the hill towards us. And what do you know, Addie, who she's usually pretty good. Like she stays at her side. I think she thinks this is her backyard and like free roaming lands. She's bounding over to the ranger and gets within 5 feet and just rolls over for a belly rub.
Well, for the full picture, Addie is a smiler, if you have seen any videos online. So Addie is baring her teeth this whole time as she's turning over. She'd be peeing as well if you could see the liquid leaving her body. She's like, I love you with all of my heart and soul to this ranger. And the ranger did not respond in kind.
The ranger did not like this. The ranger was like, where is your leash? Where is your identification? I'm like, I am 200 feet from home right now. Like, I don't have identification. It's a miracle I'm even wearing pants right now. So I very much got in trouble. She actually took out a walkie-talkie. This is classic. And calls back to whoever her boss is. And she's like, I've got a 5'5" Caucasian female here with a dog. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm like literally walking in my backyard right now.
We're totally fugitives. I don't think we're ever going to pay that.
Yeah, so we did. I did get a ticket. It was written up for running at large, which I think is fascinating. So I looked into the legal definition of running at large. It is animals which have escaped from enclosure and are wandering. And you know how last week you talked about our identities? I'm like, if I could have one identity in life, it would be running at large. Like, and that perfectly describes me. And I'm just like, honestly, it was worth a $50 ticket to be able to look up the definition of running at large.
I love it. An animal which has escaped from enclosure and is wandering. That's like you deciding not to go to residency.
Right,
after med school.
Like out there wandering the trails, exactly.
The Jurassic Park freedom moment. So the last thing in the intro that I really wanted to mention briefly is we've talked before that we love Shake a Tail Feather, which is on the original Some Work All Play playlist by Nelly. And there's always been this lyric that I thought I heard, but you know how like you kind of hear lyrics and you're not exactly sure what you're hearing. And so you just kind of assume that you misheard it.
That's the story of my life, by
the way. Yeah. So the lyric that I thought I heard, which turned out to be the actual lyric, is that your ass or your mama half a reindeer? And so I was like, your mama a reindeer? And so I Googled it. Apparently, this is one of the most commonly Googled rap phrases.
Also, this might be the best use of Google of all time.
Yeah. And so I felt like I was in the SAT, you know, like trying to get context clues, and I just could not figure it out. So I Googled, this is the official answer that I saw online. Not sure if it's 100% true, but I'm going to go with it. So it just means that the woman, or sorry, not going to gender this, that the person, the mom in this situation, must be a quarter centaur due to the size and shape of the person's ass. So half a reindeer means that, you know, it went down through the generations. So it's very cool.
That is fascinating. Also, I had to look up like what a centaur looks like, believe it or not, because I need some help in my mythical creatures. A centaur would be an amazing runner. That ass, the trail runner, that ass is useful for powering up those mountains.
Oh yeah, let's embody our inner centaur.
Let's do it. I know, but Nelly is just being empowering for us over here.
And while we're at it, another rap song, a lyric I love is from No Hands by Waka Flocka Flame. I be going ham, shorty upgrade from baloney, which is amazing. And I think we need more rap songs, not just about mythical creatures, but also lunch meats. I'm a huge fan.
Also, I love that you read that as baloney. In my head, I totally read that as bologna.
Yeah, one of those words that we were talking about.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. One of those words. But for me, okay, last lyric. My favorite lyric is by Missy Elliott in the song Work It. And it's... and it's actually... So that's... I mean, she sounds much better when she says that. But in reverse, those lyrics are, I put my thing down, flip it, and reverse it, which is amazing.
It's the best way to end the intro because we put our thing down, flipped it, and reversed the microphone.
Literally. Yeah, exactly. I love it.
Let's do this.
All right.
So let's get to topic one.
Yeah, let's go on to topic one. This topic is on building confidence and it's from LA. The question is, I'm struggling with confidence. It's not that I think I'm not enough in a general sense. I know that I'm enough and worthy and loved. Rather, in the narrow domain of running, I've fallen into the habit of telling myself that my greatest talent is my work ethic. The more miles I run, the better runner I am. I may not be genetically speedy, but I can grind. How can I relax a bit so that I don't overwork and run myself into injury? I genuinely enjoy training, and before competition, I get so much pride and confidence from reflecting on training I've done. But the shortcut to confidence is probably not sustainable in the long term. How can I be confident enough to do less?
This is an amazing question, and I love it so much because I think it's something that is almost a universal human experience in running and in other things. I was just hearing Darius Rucker on the Smartlist podcast, where he was talking about Hootie and the Blowfish, which started in 1986. They didn't have a record deal for 8 years. You know, he's like, we're the same band we always were. They ended up getting signed to a small label. They didn't, or a small deal. They were still just toiling away. They were just going to be a normal band. And then one DJ in New York decided he had free reign to play whatever song he liked. So he just played a random song late at night that was one of their first, what ended up being their first hits. David Letterman heard it, pulls over his car on the side of the road, calls his booker and says, you need to get this band, Hootie and the Blowfish, on the show next week. So as Darius Rucker tells it, that was Tuesday or Friday. Or that was Friday. I'm not sure. And then within 3 days, they were on the show. And then within 3 days after that, they were the biggest band in the world. Nothing changed. They were the same people. They were the same band. It just took that much time in that very narrowly defined area for their talent to shine fully.
And what I think is fascinating about this is if you tell this to an outsider would probably say, oh, what luck. Yeah. And I think it's really an outsider sees that one moment, but they don't see the 7 years of grinding, the 7 years of hard work that overlays with talent and other different things. And I think it's just it's fascinating to think about the perception of that situation.
Yeah, and I think it gets back to the point that almost everyone grossly underestimates their talent, probably related to good things we like about ourselves, whether it is humility or kindness or whatever. And it ends up cutting ourselves down. I mean, look at Tom Brady just won the Super Bowl, sixth round draft pick. They were showing all of him his videos at the NFL draft this week. And he does not look like an athlete at all. But clearly he's one of the most talented humans that's ever lived, independent of whatever else he has going on. And so that's remarkable. And so many athletic stories are like that. And it gets to the point that talent shines differently at different times. But often I think there's a temptation to think of talent as an instantaneous moment in time, usually right when a person starts out. And if it's not there, then it's not there.
I love that point about it shining differently at different times. It actually makes me think about the identity discussion that we had last week and the fact that I don't think that there's, one identity. It's capturing my identity in one word. I feel like the same thing applies to talent.
That's so true.
It's very hard to say my talent is this. And I think for many people, talent is so many different things. It doesn't have to be captured in one word. It doesn't have to be a traditional word. It doesn't have to be a traditional grouping of words. Yeah, I think that's something that's very cool.
A runner, it's my talent is VO2 max. And if it's not, then I'm a grinder. And there's so much more in between those things. I mean, even thinking about my athletic journey, I was reminiscing with my mom about a story that she was telling me. So I was really into multi-sport after I quit football in college. And I worked my freaking butt off for 3 or 4 years. And so I went down to this big race, drove 1,000 miles to it. It was cold that day. So I get off the bike. I have my big aerodynamic helmet on. I have my toe warmers on. And my hands are too cold to get the helmet off. So I'm standing there in a disappointing race and I just start running with my aero helmet flopping in the wind. And the whole time as I'm doing this run course, coming to terms with the fact that I'm not as good of an athlete as I want to be, my feet just start feeling really weird and really uncomfortable. And so I get to the finish line, finally am able to get my mom to take off my aero helmet, to take off my shoes, to find that the toe warmers had burned holes in the bottom of my feet, severe burns. And that was this moment where all of this work I had put in, and I was like, well, I guess I'm not that talented. And thank God trail running was waiting for me on the other end to give me something to fully go for. Because if trail running was that thing where I had learned that early, who knows if I would have continued on in the same way I did. And I think almost every athletic journey is like that. You need to just put in the time to let whatever genetic switches you have turn on. And the problem is those genetic switches aren't one gene. They're all across the genome in totally random, seemingly random associations that we're just beginning to understand.
Actually, I love that you brought up genetics on this topic. I think a really great example on this that I'm just thinking of is bone mineral density.
Yeah.
So right now we know that there's probably 20,000 different spots in your genome that help predict your bone mineral density.
Wow.
Which is a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. In totally different spots.
Totally different spots. Wow. So that's a lot of different variables coming together. Then on top of that, so many different things impact bone mineral density. So you have vitamin D, you have estrogen levels, you have all these different things. And there's genetics that influence those too. And so you're building essentially these very large decision trees of genetic switches that are impacting things that could be a talent.
Yeah.
And I think it's very cool to think about that. And just thinking about the process of turning one thing on may influence something totally downstream from that.
And it's nearly infinitely complicated association on top of association on top of association over and over and over again. And that's just bone mineral density. Not to mention when we're talking about someone's ability to, run up a hill a little bit faster or whatever it is that your specific goal is. And I think it gets back to a lot, our brains like to summarize things in hardcore numbers. So in this case, we might be talking about miles per week or, even the idea of a week, but the body doesn't play by those rules. Not only is that irrelevant, I don't think our body on the cellular level has any freaking clue what we're doing. Even 50 or 60 miles a week, let alone a few seconds per mile or whatever it is that we're using as metrics to monitor things. Our cells and systems don't pay attention to that.
And I think what I find fascinating is the fact that self-belief overlays all of that. So use the example of 50 to 60 miles a week. Give me a runner who is running 50 miles a week and believes in themselves compared to a 60 mile runner a week, who, you know, struggles with that self-belief. And I'll take the 50 mile runner per week any day.
Yeah. And that's physiology too, because, you know, this outlook on self directly influences brain chemistry. It directly influences cortisol in the endocrine system, the nervous system, recovery and adaptation rates. So, you know, harnessing that part of it to get you to think that you're at the place that you can progress is more important than like probably the specific numbers of what you're doing for how the body actually adapts in the first place and how those genetic switches can turn on over 8 or 10 years or whatever the time frame is.
You use a word a lot, actually a phrase a lot that I love, and it really helps me I think about going about life. It's compassionate completion.
Oh yeah.
And you've been talking about self-belief and the process of self-belief in running, and I think it really ties into that. But I think for us, like, we have really channeled this concept of compassionate self-completion. Compassionate self-completion. Oh my gosh, that is dirty.
That is so dirty.
Compassionate completion into the podcast. Like, you know, we aim to do this podcast.
Sorry. We just need to stop for a second to talk about compassionate self-completion. No, I'm just joking. But I think that can be the other thing that's on the bathroom, scrawled on the bathroom wall. So we talk about it with the podcast all the time. It's like, you know, for us, we don't really know what we're doing. We're figuring it out as we go. We really believe in ourselves, but, you know, we're going to have good days. We're going to have bad days. And, you know, thankfully we have listeners that really do lift us up and put wind in our sails when we don't think we might doubt ourselves in a way. And, you know, as much as you can in your own athletic journey, try to embody that compassionate completion that some of the listeners help us do. But we all have to do it with ourselves as athletes to be like, okay, I got this. I can do this. I don't need to hammer myself into oblivion. Those numbers that my brain is chasing are probably not what my body needs or wants.
I think a great place to start with compassionate completion is on workout day. So going into the workout and resolving to be like, I'm going to finish this workout and I'm going to feel good about myself during the process. I don't know if that sounds simple, but it's actually way harder than it looks.
Oh, it's so hard, especially if you have any metrics or anything available to you to judge yourself. Essentially, what this is trying to get us all to do is to turn down the self-judgment, because often the self-judgment is all due to an availability bias. We are being our harshest critics in ways that don't not only make it less fun, but also cut down our physiological growth.
I totally agree. And I think this is also an amazing transition into topic two.
Yeah,
so let's do it. So topic two is on consistency. And this question is from CA. Please ask Addy Dog if there's any difference between running 3 miles 6 times a week versus running 6 miles 3 times a week versus 3 miles twice a week plus a 12-mile long run. Assume cold, windy, slog level, easy running. Thanks and cheers.
Well, I love this. And the basic idea we're trying to tee up here in the last few minutes is that the body responds to frequency. We're going to talk about running to start and then broaden it out at the end. The start with the aerobic factors, blood volume expansion and angiogenesis, so the capillary expansion, both rely on constant reinforcement.
And I think layer on top of that, musculoskeletal factors. So thinking about things like muscle fiber recruitment, even just like adaptations to the impact of running.
And then maybe the biggest of all is the neuromuscular and biomechanical things, the how the nervous system works. The more that you do this, the better you get at it. So my answer would be the 6 3-mile runs, even though they feel shorter, they're going to unlock what you're actually able to do long term, because it'll allow your body to adapt.
I think the other thing that I think about here is, so Tin Man, the coach Tin Man, Tom Schwartz, has a great phrase, keep the ball rolling. And I think the thing about frequency too is it really helps keep that momentum rolling.
Yeah.
And that's something that's amazing, and it's something that you can derive confidence from.
I thought of another funny story here, in that you know how you can apply this to anything. And so when my baseball teammates, when I was in high school, found out that I practiced on the weekends, I got given a hard time, because I think that's just kind of the nature of kids, you know? But the reason I did that is I had read that you kind of have to do that to teach your brain to get better at these patterns that you want to repeat. So the whole team's gathered around, and they were talking about the typical things that teenage boys talk about, which was, in this case, about what various people did compassionate self-completion to. And then all of a sudden it gets really quiet, and the senior captain just looks at David, the freshman, looks at me, the freshman, and just says, well, I bet David does. And then he starts pantomiming compassionate self-completion and then just says, for the love of the game.
Oh my God. Well, first of all, this is the first time I've ever heard this story. And second of all, thank you for weaving in my word slip into this. This is fantastic. I love that. I think the other thing for me that I think about too is the process of just like keep showing up. So like this process of frequency starts now. Like we talk about the athletes. It's like, it's as easy as, you know, going outside for a 15-minute run.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think there's all these phrases out there about like, it's a new day, it's a new week, it's a new year. And it's like, yeah, those are great times, but also like now is a great time. It's a new now.
Where I think a lot of endurance athletes, like we all talk about upper body work and I'll get to it. I'll get to the gym. Well, right now, stop listening and do 5 push-ups on your knees if you've never done them. Like, you know, start somewhere. Now is a great place. And that applies to anything too. You just have to give yourself a chance in life. You know, because without giving yourself a chance, you're never going to find that talent. You're never going to find all the different things that can bubble up from the very bottom of your soul and be the magic, the great stuff in there.
Go turn on all those switches, both in genetics and around the house.
Amazing way to end it. We love you guys. We appreciate everything
you've
done
so
for
much.
Us.
Rate, subscribe, do whatever you do to podcasts. You guys are the best. Bye.